everybody.
Hello.
And by everybody, I mean one person who seems to be in our chat room.
Well, no one likes the music. You scared them all away with your Pauly D chant.
Oh, my goodness. My Pauly D chant. What is this? Listen, we're not in the club.
It's what it sounds like.
No.
I'll never get over it. Okay.
So.
Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Happy Wednesday, everyone.
Hump day.
Oh, my God. Don't start with that. Hey, Mike.
What day is it?
You know what day it is? Hey, Mike. Oh, my God. Anyway, hey, thanks for everybody listening in tonight. We're all energetic because last week we had a fun show last week.
Going to be a great show.
Well, it was a good time, though. We were real relaxed. If you tuned in, you heard, you got to hear Mike Galante, who's our lead investigator. And we had Dom call in, Dom Bouchard, or Dom Ghost Hunter, as everybody knows him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun.
Yes, it was.
We always have a good time when we're talking to Dom and Mike. And we might have been slightly inebriated, that's the rumor, but...
That's all right.
It was okay, though, because it was still a good show. We had fun, and everybody seemed to enjoy it, so...
How's everyone this fine, muggy Wednesday afternoon, evening?
Yes, we'll wait for you to respond. Go ahead, tell us.
Waiting!
Tell us how you are. Looking forward to it.
Bloody.
But anyway, so we had our Lizzie Borden event this past weekend.
Yes, we did.
And it, if I do say so myself, was a success.
It was.
Nobody was hacked up or chopped up at any point in time during the night. And
it was fun.
It was a good time. Everybody got along.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got some sleep, mm-hmm. whether it be 3 hours, 2 hours, an hour, but everybody got some sleep.
Most of us had paranormal hangovers the next morning.
Paranormal hangovers for a couple of days.
Yeah.
But no, we had a paranormal. For those of you, I'm sure most of you who listen are paranormal investigators, so we don't really need to explain what a paranormal hangover is. However,
but you should, because there are some people that aren't investigators and maybe don't know.
Well, then I guess I'll just tell them. Shall I?
Yes, you shall.
Okay. So anyway, so. Somebody somewhere along the way coined the term paranormal hangover for that feeling you get in the following days, weeks, whatever, after an investigation. At first, it's likened to a hangover from drinking. You're a little lethargic and maybe your head hurts. You feel kind of cloudy.
Mm-hmm.
But a paranormal hangover can last days, weeks, years even, depending upon how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that after effect from an investigation, the excitement of it, the adrenaline rush, the letdowns, the highs, the lows, and even some of the crap you might take home with you kind of lingers around.
Experiences that you may have had, whether good or bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we had that sort of thing happen to most of us. Most of the people I've talked to from the event suffered some sort of a paranormal hangover for a few days. Some of us maybe our emotions were a little compromised and lashed out at people we shouldn't have lashed out at. And other people just kind of couldn't reconnect with the world for a few days.
Like pulled themselves off for a few days. Yeah. That's all right. It happens.
But, you know, it was fun. It was a good time. Mm-hmm. We hope to do it again someday. I want to go back there.
I'd love to go back there. I didn't think the room I stayed in was nice.
Yeah. No, that was a good room.
Yeah.
That was the room that you stayed in was the same room I stayed in, so.
Was it?
The room that we stayed in was nice. I was for a second there going, where did I stay? What room was I in?
It's just a nice house in general. Take away from take away the fact that something horrific happened there.
Yeah.
It's just a nice house in general.
Yeah. So, we had that. I might have slipped out a major announcement earlier today and not told you about it, or told too many people about it, except for everybody on Facebook.
Yep.
So
I live here, by the way. Just so you know, I live here. And we share a room.
Next year, May 23rd. That's mm-hmm. Memorial Day weekend for those of you who are looking at your calendars right now. May 23rd, Fort Mifflin. We will have an all-day event, sort of like a con, like a paracon style, where we will have vendors out in the open air.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, it'll be in the fort, but in the open air,
right
in the parade grounds.
I don't think that was called the parade ground, but whatever. Good, continue.
God forbid I call something the wrong thing. Jesus. So anyway, they'll be in the open air, but we will have lectures and workshops and demonstrations going on throughout the day. The fort themselves will have some things going on. Plus, we will also have our special guests, if you will, perhaps participating in with some lectures and whatnot. So mm-hmm. it's going to be a fun day. There will be an investigation that night of mm-hmm. Fort Mifflin. Tickets will be going on sale soon. We just have to finish getting everything squared away.
Yeah.
Vendor spots will be available soon, and all the information will be released as far as what the cost is going to be. We're trying to make it so it's not ridiculous, and I think everybody's going to be able to afford it and come and have a good time.
Yeah, be good.
So,
Ice Wake, see, we said goodbye to summer with the Lizzie event, and we're going to say hello to summer with Fort Mifflin.
Exactly. I like to look at it that way, too.
Yep.
It's going to be, we have bookends, goodbye and hello.
Yeah.
We're also going to be, hopefully, doing some sort of an event this fall. At the moment, we can't disclose where because they don't want us to.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say it's in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the western part of the state. No, it's not Houghton Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a place that most people probably have never seen nor heard of, but should. So if we can get the okay to mention the name, we will. Otherwise, that will be going on at some point in time.
Super top secret.
Super duper top secret. Hopefully we'll have a guest whose name will just be enough for people to go, let's go investigate with that guy.
Yeah.
Or girl. Or whoever it might be.
No. Horse. So, dog.
Horse. That horse.
Horse.
What'd you call me?
A horse is a horse, of course.
What? Mr. Ed? We going on there?
Mr. Ed. That's bringing it back, Nick at Night style. I used to watch Mr. Ed on Nick at Night when I was little.
With Wilbur?
Yep.
Wilbur. That was like cross between Ronald Reagan and I don't know what. So anyway, yeah, what else is new?
I'm a little tired right now.
We've got a cool guest tonight. We're not doing the spotlight tonight.
No, we have a guest who we feel deserves our full attention tonight.
Yeah, and for those of you who aren't familiar with Mr. Jeff Mudgett,
mm-hmm.
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
I'd like to know why you're tuning in if you don't know who Jeff is. But Jeff is, and first of all, we met Jeff at Power History Con.
Yes.
We heard him before on Keeping the Spirits Alive.
Yes.
And sorry for the shameless throw out there.
Self-promotion?
Actually, no. Keeping the Spirits Alive is on before our show. So we heard Jeff on Keeping the Spirits Alive, and then we got to meet him in person
mm-hmm.
at Para History Con 2. And Jeff has written an incredible book called Bloodstains.
Yes.
And if you haven't read the book, you should, because he pretty much sums up the title of the book in his words in the opening. So, you know, that book is essentially talking about his family tree, his stained blood, if you will. It's, I don't want to give it away. I'll let Jeff give you the lowdown on it. Cause
his connection to a person of historical significance for our country.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard the name H.H. Holmes, then you need to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
You need to read Bloodstains.
Yep.
And then you need to start doing some research because this dude, he's an intricate person.
Yeah.
He was an intricate character.
Read Bloodstains first. It's an easy. I don't want to say it's an easy read. I don't want to, you know, like belittle anything that Jeff wrote, but for it flows very nicely, and it's the kind of book that, you know, anyone can pick up and get into.
Yeah.
It's not too technical. You know, it's not drab. It's actually the way that he, that's the word I'm looking for, the way that he's made his chapters kind of like shifts a little bit back and forth, but you know, telling the story, going back to a little bit of history, and then coming back to the present, and kind of connecting each part of the story.
Yeah, the flow of it is...
it's really good.
Yeah, it makes it an easy read, and you will learn a lot.
And also, thanks to Mark, now every time I read anything, I hear the person who wrote it reading it back to me.
Speaking of the person who wrote it, Mr. Jeff Mudgett, how are you tonight?
Hey, Mark. Hey, Lauren. How are you? And thanks for having
good
me on the show.
Thank you for coming on. We're excited to have you on. This is
we're very excited to have you.
We're trying to figure out how to segue. You know, how can we throw Jeff into the mix here and make it important and big? So we decided to like kind of wrap a whole month here of September around authors.
Yeah.
And you're kicking it off, and I don't think there was anybody better that we could have had on.
Well, that's quite a privilege and an honor. Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
How have you been, my friend?
Good. We're working on preparing for the big event at the end of the month in Philadelphia. We've got two grand jury proceedings about proving that H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper, and we're going to seek an indictment with a jury, a sworn-in jury, after we present evidence based on federal law and see how the jury decides. I'm really looking forward to it, and we've been working for 2 weeks straight now on our presentation of evidence so that we have it right. And to tell you the truth, I'm excited, I'm nervous, and I tell you what, I've been waiting for this for 2 years now.
Wow, that is so... Kudos to you, man. That's an incredible, incredible achievement that you finally got them to do it, do the hearing.
That's right, and it's the Newman University in Philadelphia. They're going to sponsor it. We're going to be interviewed by the National Public Radio first, and then the local television is going to cover it too. So it's a big deal. The fella called me today and said that we're going to have criminologists there, lawyers, judges. We're going to have historians. We're going to have ripperologists. We're going to have Holmes experts, and I'm going to have a lot of very tough questions.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And if anybody's going to be prepared, we know that you will be prepared for all of it because, after spending just the brief amount of time we did with you at TerraStreetCon, man, you've got your stuff together, and, mm-hmm. and you've done so much research into your family, let alone just H.H. Holmes. I mean, this is something that we're going right down the bloodline here, and this is somebody who was impactful on your life and your family.
That's right, and that's what I tried to explain to people that are considering reading the book, Mark and Lauren, is that it's not about H.H. Holmes, it's not about Jack the Ripper, it's about the psychological journey that I took once my grandfather told me the truth about who we were and who we were related from, and it's that change in life that I had the actual tilt that changed everything that I thought real and right and wrong, and that's what the book's about. So when someone asks me, is it all about Jack the Ripper, is it all about H.H. Holmes? No, not at all. It's more about me and my grandfather and how we changed what we thought of each other after having spent life ignorant of having descended from the most evil man that ever lived.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's a fair statement there, by the way, saying that, because, you know, all evidence points to the fact that this other than, you know, obviously people like Hitler or somebody like that, single-handedly doing the deed himself.
Yeah, right.
This guy was a bad dude.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it that way. You know, I'm just, I guess, a little bit keeping it light here because I know that this is something that you've been into for years and years. And I'm just curious, and the book translates it very well, but when you first found out, I mean, you can tell it in the story all you can, but when you first found out that who H.H. Holmes was and how diabolical the man was and that you were a direct descendant, what was that gut feeling? What did that feel like when you found that out?
And that's exactly where I felt it in my gut, but try to imagine suddenly learning that the reason you're here today, the reason I'm talking to you and Lauren, are the conscious decisions of this monster. And try to put yourself into that place where, and that's what I ask my readers to do, push me aside, step into my shoes, and ask yourself what you would have done. But that place when you learn that his decisions are why you exist, why you live, it's a tough place to be. At first, I thought I could handle it. I could brush it off and just keep living the normal life. It wasn't possible. It almost wrecked my entire life. And as you read in the book, I had to fight it, and I had to fight it hard in order to find a place to come out in the middle somewhere. And I think I've done that now. My life, to tell you the truth, Lauren, is probably happier now than it was before I knew. And it has to do with defining, you know, the things that we are as human beings. And I think all of us need to do that. It came up on me just, you know, with a slam that I had to do immediately.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, judging from the book, it seems like you took after your grandmother in being so adamant about finding, you know, like digging into your history the way she was with the whole General Lee story.
you know, you're the first that's ever said it like that, and I think you're probably right. I couldn't just hide away from it like so many of my family had. They were denying that it ever happened, to tell you the truth. And I knew that it was going to come out in movies. I knew that other authors were writing, you know, bestsellers about it, The Devil in the White City, et cetera. And that I'm the type that would rather get out in front of a story like that and tell it from my perspective. And I think I've done that in the book. And pretty much most people that read it enjoy it. Some people are very angry after reading Bloodstains, and I can understand why. I was at a party about 2 months ago, Mark, 3 months ago, and I had a lady come up to me and tell me that I was a poor excuse for a human being, and she threw her cocktail all over me.
Oh, my God.
Seriously?
Yeah, so I get different reactions from people from reading the book, which my other author friends tell me is a good reaction to a book that actually touches people's souls. So maybe that's what it did.
Well, yeah. I mean, to get angry enough to throw a drink at you, to travel all that way just to throw a drink at you, you had something. You did something to her.
Yeah. And she didn't explain it to me. She stalked out of the room.
Poor Jeff. I have another question for you, Jeff.
Sure.
If it's okay, if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. But I'm wondering about, you talk about your relationship with Grandpa Bert, with Pops. Do you think that if he were around today, do you think that he might have opened up a little bit and might have answered some of the questions, some of the things that maybe he knew about the family that you don't or didn't?
You know, Lauren, you should have been a psychologist. These are good. You know, having known him, I doubt it. He might have been proud of me for writing the book. He might have silently nodded to me when I wasn't looking his way. As far as, you know, as far as being loving, you know, as a grandfather should be to his grandson, I doubt it. But I think this is what he wanted me to do. He just was a little bit of a robot. He didn't know how to express emotions very well, and for him to change, you know, at that late age, I kind of doubt he would have.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry, I'm speechless here, because I'm actually, like, sitting here, like, I'm watching and listening to the radio show for a moment. You captured me, Jeff. I'm sorry. But, So, I want to get into a little bit talking about, the book itself, yes, but I want to talk a little bit about, because people are listening because they want to know a little bit more about Holmes. And, you know, everybody probably by now should know about the murder castle in Chicago that was set up and used during the World's Fair. Has there been any further progress made, I guess, to maybe starting to identify some more of the victims? Because I know his account is a lot different than what he was, you know, I guess, charged with or considered to have murdered. His account was probably much higher than what he was actually connected to. Has there been any progress or any attempt made to continue and find and discover some of these bodies?
You know, that's exactly what I'm dedicating my life to now, Mark, and I'm glad you asked, because I just was notified by the Department of Justice that they received a letter I wrote to Attorney General Holder about 3-4 months ago, asking him to do the right thing. Let's excavate the property. We can leave the post office operating, but let's excavate the grounds. Let's try to identify those victims and then do a proper memorialization to them. Because, to tell you the truth, what happened to them, Mark, was horrible. They're homicides, obviously. But what our government did in 1937, when it knowingly bought the murder castle, knowing what had happened there, they scraped it off, they filled it in with concrete, and they built a post office over the top without making any effort to identify and properly memorialize those poor victims. And I got to tell you, that sits wrong in my stomach. I think it's my destiny to change that, to make it the right thing happen finally. And like I say, I was just notified that the Department of Justice had received my letter and that Attorney General Holder was considering it. And that if he did consider it, that means President Obama would see it too. So maybe we're on the right track, Mark, and maybe in a couple of years we can identify those victims using, you know, DNA forensics.
Right.
And then put a monument to them there, as should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah, it's difficult, obviously, because, you know, like you said, they paid no regard to the I don't want to say the history, but what had happened there, and just kind of knocked it down, filled it in, built a post office, and said, okay, be on with it. And, you know, I guess I don't know how they couldn't possibly expect at some point in time somebody was going to go, wait a second.
Yeah.
Some really crazy stuff happened to here, and it just all went away.
Yeah.
Why haven't we gone deeper? Why haven't we said, you know, okay, there was a castle here with all kinds of crazy rooms and chutes and a basement, and I mean, what? Just leave it, move on. Nobody's gonna, nothing to see here. It's magic.
Cover it up, and I'll forget about it.
Yes.
Oh, which is a shame.
That's what the government does best.
you both know from having read the book, every time you get to some part in its history like that, when mm-hmm. something happens that shouldn't have happened, you come up with another quote-unquote coincidence that needs to be researched, and lo and behold, we'll find something new about why that building was treated like it was. So when we excavate, Lauren, I'm convinced we're going to find a lot of evidence. We're going to find, obviously, the identifications of some of those victims, and we're going to maybe rewrite history about what happened both before and after with things that Holmes buried in those grounds.
Good. You know what? And I hope you do. I'm behind you 100%. So is Mark.
Yep.
200%.
And if you need a good archaeologist to assist you, I happen to be engaged to one, so she'd be more than happy, I'm sure.
I remember Lauren telling me that at Fort Henry.
Man, that was a good time. We really enjoyed spending that time with you up at Fort William Henry. You're the dancer, aren't you?
One more time, I missed that.
I said you're quite the dancer, aren't you?
That's one of my favorite. I tell you what, with a couple of cocktails, that's one of my favorite things to do in the world.
I love it. I love that you do that. That's so awesome. It goes right along with your personality.
So
something that I think about, Jeff, like when I see that, you know, you studied lawyer, and how H.H. Holmes was so kind of naturally inclined towards the justice system, you know, defending himself during the trials. So, like, do you sometimes feel like that was something, that's something in your blood too?
Well, he obviously had the intellect and the IQ. He had one of the highest ever recorded at the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't surprising to me when I found out that he had fired his lawyers and defended himself. In fact, some of his techniques are still taught in law schools today. That was his only trial. He never prepared for one. He never was taught about how to do it.
Right.
Actually, he loved, I kind of think of his life, Lauren, as a match of chess with law enforcement. So for mm-hmm. him to play back and forth with a judge, with a jury observing, I think he was probably in his element, and that may have been one of his favorite moments of his life.
Right. Yeah, I can see that exactly. Just kind of from, based on like what you've written and judging from him as a child, growing up, all the things that he did in college with the selling of the organs and the skeletons and the insurance fraud and all these, you know, he came up with an idea. He what's the word I'm looking for? Like he was able to pull it off,
yeah.
And he was successful and everyone loved him. He charmed everybody.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, at midnight he was hacking up poor young women and men and God knows what else for, you know, for experimentation, right?
Yeah, he was the example of, you know, of an evil genius. He knew the way the human mind worked. He knew what he had to do to get into that inside part that he needed. And he played the role, well, like I say, to the utmost and maybe better than it's ever been played before. Now, Mark, when you brought up Hitler and Stalin as more evil, those people were responsible for more deaths, but they didn't do it with their own hands. Can you imagine if Holmes had an army behind him and he was giving orders to kill other societies with countries around them? So I stand by my statement. He was the most evil that ever lived.
Yeah.
No, he definitely, and I was by no means was I trying to, I guess, you know, by no means was I trying to dilute the statement.
Mm-hmm.
I just was, you know, saying, okay, like you said, yes, they've killed more people, but he did it single-handedly. He did it with his own hand. And, I mean, he strikes me as the type of person who wouldn't have wanted armies and you know, and people to do it for him anyway. He would have rather have been able to just go out and, my God, just whatever he could get away with without getting caught and making it so...
The thrill of the chase kind of thing.
Yeah, making it so clean and so unsuspecting, I guess. Mm. And then this guy, how could he possibly have done this? So, to me, that's where you're absolutely right. He definitely is probably one of the most evil men to ever live. I have a sort of a personal question for you. We're talking a lot about Holmes, but like you said, Bloodstains is really about your personal journey. I really am curious if there are days, and I'm sure there are, where you sort of just have to take a step back, take a deep breath, and just sort of emotionally regroup yourself and snap away from the research and just reading about all these things that he did.
You know, it happened a lot while I was writing the book. I didn't know about my mental condition, the epilepsy. I didn't have the medicine that I take now. I would suffer the seizures where Holmes would actually talk to me. The neurologists all state that as normal, that's what happens in a seizure. You have voices come into your head. I tend to doubt what they say, and I try to argue it in the book. I think it was more than that. But I haven't had Holmes talk to me in maybe a year or two now, and I don't think he's ever coming back. And I think I've pretty much handled that part of my life, and now I'd just like to try explaining to the people that read the book, not so much, you know, how Holmes killed a young lady in which room of the basement, but more the boundaries of our human nature, what we're capable of being, and this is obviously the outer limits, excuse me using that phrase, but this is the example of it, and I think people need to learn that it wasn't the result of him being beaten as a child, it wasn't any mental illness he suffered. This was a man who could have been a Louis Pasteur, he was that intelligent, he could have cured cancer maybe. Instead, he decided to murder. He decided to torture. He decided to experiment with innocent human beings who had no business being strapped to a table while he worked to see what they could survive, you know, from him. So I think we need to know as a society, as a race, what we're capable of, and I think Bloodstains goes a long way describing it.
Wow.
Yes.
And you're right on there. I think that you've done that. And again, if anybody out there hasn't read the book yet, or has been a little bit on the fence about doing it, saying, oh, yeah, I'll get to it, do it. The book doesn't cost $500.
No.
You can get the book for, what is it, $10.99, I believe?
I think $14.95, right?
$14.95? Mm-hmm. The book is not, it's affordable, and it's definitely worth the read.
Yeah.
This is American history we're talking about. This is world history we're talking about, not American history.
Yeah.
And this is also, you know, the story of a man's life finding out about that. You recently, from what I gathered on Facebook, you recently did some TEDx talks. Is that correct?
No, they've got me scheduled to do one next month. I haven't got the final word yet, but I am so excited about it. I mean, TED, as you know, TED Talks is maybe the epitome for an author or an artist. They cold called me, they had watched the History Channel show, Haunted History, where I went down into the basement with the History Channel film crew, and they decided they wanted me to come up and talk about that change in my life, having learned who I was. And their whole... Their episode next month is called Tilt, TILT. And
okay.
And they're having people talk that have had events in their lives which change them black and white. And they consider what happened to me as a tilt. And I tell you what, I was so excited. They told me that I'm right there. They haven't given me the final word yet, but when they do, in the next couple of days maybe, it'll be October 16th in Vancouver, Canada.
Wow.
Awesome. I'm excited for that. I love the TED Talks.
Yeah.
They're so informative and just cool.
Yeah. It's a very cool atmosphere.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about it. It's a great forum.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, the epitome for any artist or writer. I bet you there's a ton of people out there who have no idea about the TEDx Talks. We actually had Jeff Belanger on a couple of weeks ago, and he had done one of the TED Talks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fantastic, quick little half hour.
Not even. It was like 10 minutes about ghosts in the White House and the history of the White House. And, you know, and it was just, I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
It's going to be cool.
Oh, so Jeff was on TED.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. He would have been great on it. Yeah, they only give you 18 minutes. They only gave Steven Spielberg 18 minutes. They gave President Clinton 18 minutes. That's, you get to get up and say your piece and get off the stage.
Yep. Get up, get on it, and get off. See you later.
Doesn't matter who you are. Get off. 18's up. Get out of here. Wow, that's excellent. I can't wait to hear those and see them, too. I'm really looking forward to it. So getting backtracking here a little bit to your trip coming up soon to do the inquest here. Do you...
The Inquisition in Philadelphia.
You're traveling to Philadelphia for an Inquisition. But going to Philly coming up soon. How involved is this going to be? Days upon days. I mean, do you have a time frame of how long this is going to be going on, or?
You know, I like the word inquest. I might change the whole event to do that. No, I'm kidding you. It's a grand jury proceeding. It'll probably last 2 hours. It's at a university in Philadelphia called Newman. It's a Catholic university. It's a beautiful college. They contacted us out of the blue and decided they wanted us to do the first grand jury about Holmes maybe having committed the murders in London that we're all familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after they agreed to, the Ebenezer Mansion in downtown Philadelphia, which was built in like 1855, I think it's a gorgeous old building. They wanted us to do a more intimate grand jury with about 50 people. So we're going to do two on that same day. And then check this out, Lauren. The next day, the Archdiocese approved the Newman University professor and I going back to the Holy Cross Cemetery where Herman was allegedly buried. So it'll be another visit for me there, and I tell you what, it gave me chills when I when they asked me if I would be interested to go back to the cemetery, and so it's going to be a great weekend. I can't wait for it. And what we're going to do is I'm going to act as prosecuting attorney. We're going to swear in the audience just like they were on an official grand jury, and then we're going to present evidence just like I used to do for a living. And at the end of it all, I think we've got 30 pieces of evidence now. At the end of it all, they're going to vote to see if we can raise a quorum to indict Holmes, if he was still alive, obviously, so that he could be extradited to London to stand trial for those murders under English law. So it's the first time anyone's considered doing it this way, which is the right way. It should have been done this way a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you know what happens, Mark? Authors think they can prove homicide. No author can prove any homicide. It's done beyond reasonable doubt in a court of law using the rules of evidence in front of a jury and a judge. Writing a book doesn't qualify for that. So I'm going to try to set all the doubters aside, because I got to tell you, when you start talking about theories of who Jack the Ripper is, the angry, mean people come out of the woodwork. I still haven't figured out why. Maybe you both can help me with this, but they get very angry, and the closer you get to proving this, the angrier they get. You guys have any idea why?
No, I don't. I'm actually more curious. I get happier the closer you get.
It's that whole mystique of you know, who he could have been and not who he was. Everybody wants to imagine he was, you know, some great doctor who just went rogue and started hacking people up or something. Or, you know, I even saw something the other day that said Vincent Van Gogh was Jack the Ripper. That was I chuckled at that a little bit too. But how can you give our listeners a little bit of a obviously you can't give them anything too great, but a little bit of a taste about how the pieces started kind of fall into place for you about Holmes and the possibility that he could have been, or the what you do believe is the fact that he was Jack the Ripper.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. As a matter of fact, if they go on my website right now at bloodstainsthebook.com, bloodstainsthebook, all one word, .com, if you go down to the bottom of the home page, there's two of our best pieces of evidence at the bottom of the page. The handwriting analysis we do comparing Holmes's writing with the Dear Boss and the From Hell letters, the Jack the Ripper letters, and then also the computer composite that was created by the Scotland Yard and the BBC in 2006 using the 13 eyewitness testimonies that there were during the times of the murder. So what most people don't realize, Lauren, is that there were 13 eyewitnesses to what Jack the Ripper looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And the law enforcement considers them credible witnesses. Most times when you have a homicide or a crime like this, some eyewitnesses come in and law enforcement immediately throws them away. They know they're not good. These are strong witnesses who had a good look of the killer. So what they did in 2006, they took it to this computer that Scotland Yard uses to create a composite image of a face or a profile. They ran these 13 testimonies in, and they came out with an image. And it's on my page right now on the home page. And then what we did, my friend John Stevenson, he's a computer genius. He's probably friends on your Facebook page. He's a paranormal investigator in Chicago, one of the best. But he created a morph program so that the photo of Holmes morphs into that computer composite of Jack the Ripper. And if you go to the homepage, you can see it right now, and it's an amazing similarity. I took it to an investigator in Virginia that did this for a living, observing computer composites. He said this was the closest he ever saw in his career. So those are two of the 30 pieces of evidence we're going to put up on stage for the grand jury to consider.
Mm-hmm.
It's very strong evidence. It's very strong. It's not DNA. We don't have a video of who the killer is, but we have as much as you could possibly have after 125 years after the crime.
Yeah, we're just looking at the picture, and that is just, I get the chills looking at it, Jeff.
I was watching the other day, and I'm like, come on, man, this is almost dead on.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And I swear to God, there's no photoshopping there. There's no playing with that picture. What you do is what some people will call me and say, Jeff, the composite looks like Freddie Mercury. It does look like Freddie Mercury.
He kind of does.
look at the bridge of the nose and compare it with Holmes's nose. Look at the earlobe. Look at the eyelid, the bottom eyelid. Look at the jawline. That's what the expert was telling me to do. And when you take those particular parts of that image, which he said that's what a professional expert looks for, he says they're right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you even went through the trouble on your page of saying, you know, that this is a series of photos that it's a time lapse of the photos being overlaid each other.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not a computer program just sort of adjusting the pictures to make them fit.
Yeah.
To me, it's uncanny. Of course, there's a couple small differences, but there's always going to be. I mean, you're not looking at a photograph. You're getting somebody's eyewitness account of their eyes, their nose, their jaw, the lips. Of course, there's going to be a little bit of a difference in there, but, man, that's pretty indisputable to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then let me explain. Forensically, law enforcement agencies generally get these composites from one, maybe two eyewitnesses. This is from 13 eyewitnesses. That's
right.
What makes it all the more powerful.
Yeah.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about, I read something in Bloodstains where you talked about Holmes being the master of hypnosis. Now, did you mean that in terms of actually hypnotizing people? Did you mean that in terms of his charm and his I don't know, his suave personality?
I believe he was a master at hypnosis. I know that the instruction the judge gave the jury and the witnesses was true. The judge told them not to look into his eyes. So when you consider, Lauren, that this man had 200 or 300 mistresses in his short life, if it was short, he had 6 wives. He had very little trouble talking a woman into doing what he wanted her to do. I don't believe that was just because he was good looking. I think there was more.
Yeah.
Had to have been.
Yeah.
Plus, he also had assistants in the murder castle. Here's a serial killer, maybe the only one ever, maybe, that had assistants helping him mass murder. There had to be something more than him just scaring them or offering them money. I think that hypnosis thing is right on.
Wow. Yeah. Now that you say that, I'm remembering some of the stories that you wrote. That makes total sense.
Now, you mentioned that you're going to be going back to Holy Cross Cemetery, correct? Where you believe his body was to be buried?
Well, I think that's where it was alleged to be buried, right?
Yeah.
Do you give any merit to the root that I'm watching the History Channel, going back to that thought of maybe he wasn't executed, that somebody else was executed and he escaped and continued on?
Mark, there's no doubt in my mind it's not him. It's not him in that concrete block. When I started researching the story, and I was interested in what the New York Times put together about the Holmes curse, about the 30 or 40 people that had irritated him in his arrest, the trial, and alleged execution that were either murdered or suffered terrible misfortune after his alleged execution. And then I started looking at the weirdness of his execution, how things, they didn't follow the law, they didn't follow the rules, they did everything different. And then that concrete stuff where he comes off the scaffolding and immediately goes into a coffin and concrete is poured over the body.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, this is a man who could have cared less about what happened to his body after death. He didn't believe in God. He didn't believe in any of those things. He could care less about his hydrocarbons. There was something to this. There was something to this. And when we kept digging, it came up obvious that this wasn't him. And as we put that together and worked it backwards, I have no doubt whatsoever, and I'll stand up in front of a national TV camera and say, I'm sorry, I was a fool, it really is him, when they dig that concrete up, and when we compare what's in that concrete with my tissue, the Smithsonian has already said they're going to take possession of the remains.
Wow.
We're going to compare that DNA, and if it's the same, then I'll say, you know what, I was wrong, it's him. But I'll guarantee you, I'll bet you $10 right now it's not.
Yeah.
Wow, the Smithsonian, that is going to be so, like, incredible to find out about.
And I was happy they wanted to do that, Lauren, because I didn't want it to be a Geraldo Rivera event.
Right, exactly. Wait, you didn't want Maury coming up?
No.
So, do you believe? If believe me, I'm easily. You've got me sold, so I'm not disputing anything. But my curiosity is here. Do you believe that it was something where Holmes had escaped, and instead of admitting that this horrendous person was back in society and they had no idea where he was, they just grabbed someone else and this is Holmes. We're killing him. See you later. Yup, he's buried. Have a nice day. You know, just so they could save face and sort of put society at ease?
I tell you what, I explain exactly how he did it in the book on that chapter about the alleged execution and how his guard was hanged in his place.
Yeah.
And if you walk it through, you'll see this genius, with the help of a couple accomplices and the incredible naivete of the warden of the prison and the judge at his execution sentencing, hired the Pinkerton guards to help him walk this through, and he did it. And it's going, you know, he knew, Mark, check this out. If he knew that if someone else was buried in this place, and if it wasn't protected by hard concrete, the body would have been dug up, the brain sold, or the skeleton sold to some circus or fair, mm-hmm. and they would have realized it wasn't him, and you would have had the greatest manhunt since the assassination of President Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He knew he had one chance at this, and that concrete was the key. Not only was the coffin filled with concrete, when they lowered it into the hole at Holy Cross Cemetery, they put 10 feet more concrete over it.
Yeah. Who's that on the guy? It's like making me crazy. Who's the famous body that everyone says, oh, Capone? Is it Capone?
That's right. You're exactly right.
So it's like,
you're
where's
right.
Al Capone buried? Where's A.T. Holmes buried? It's going to be the next, you know.
No, you're thinking
of...
Oh, it's
not Al Capone. Who is it? I can't think of who it is. No,
you're thinking of...
Yeah,
what the hell is his name?
I know.
Jimmy Hoffa.
Jimmy Hoffa. There you go. Thank you.
Oh. There are a lot of famous historical names at the Holy Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a story. I get so enamored by it. Now I love a good mystery, and I love conspiracy theories. So for me, this is like, I want to jump on the team. I want to be there. I want to give me a shovel. Give me a jackhammer. I'll help dig the body up. Let's go. We got to get this going now. I don't care who, you know, you're getting so close to getting everything you need to having all this come together. And I really do believe you're going to get it all to come together. I'm so enamored by this story that I'm so proud to call you a friend and to get to have known you and can't wait to see this thing all the way through.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
You know, I really appreciate that, and I enjoyed both your company at the convention, John Tobin's great convention. I tell you what, I really I miss John. He's a great friend too. So. I tell you what, if both of you can, there's still a few seats left for the grand jury. You could be a member of the grand jury. It's the first time in history, and we're gonna rewrite it. You could be there.
I just got chills.
how do we go about finding out how to do that? I might want to do that. Wait a minute. I'm slightly tarnished now, aren't I? Can I be on the grand jury if I already... Yes, it's true. Let's go. Let's pick it up.
Yeah, well, I'm the prosecuting attorney. I'll let you on.
Now, question for you, Jeff, is how different your life would have been had you never opened those two boxes? Or if you'd opened them and never discovered what was inside?
I got to tell you, that's, Lauren, I was riding my bicycle home from some banking earlier today, and I was thinking about that myself, and I was a very competitive, very aggressive. I was a very successful businessman in California before I knew all of this. And when it came out what it was all about, I had a curiosity about those demons that had been on my shoulder all my 40 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of my life after then was about ridding them from my shoulder. And when I did, that competitiveness, that aggressiveness, that unfriendliness vanished as well. And I'm not the same person by any means. I'm a much friendlier person, I think. I get along with people now. I'm looking always to make new friends. And I didn't have any of that before then. And I really think it was an amazing change of my life. And I wouldn't want it different for anything.
Good. We're happy. We're happy you changed.
Yeah. Look at this incredible...
Look at the incredible story that we have that everyone has now. Yeah.
This incredible story that's come forward, it's opening eyes, opening minds, and, you know, again, if somebody hasn't picked up the book,
mm-hmm.
they need to. I posted the site earlier, bloodstainsthebook.com. You know, you got to get on there and buy a copy of the book and read it and get involved.
Read it, analyze it, get involved. You know, go to Jeff's site. Do your own research, you know? Come up with your own opinion, but I mean, at least delve into it a little bit, because Jeff's worked long and hard to get this information out and to get people to notice it.
Yeah.
And I think he's done a great job with the book.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, the time... Go ahead.
You can pick it up at Amazon, too, ebook. We tried to keep the price low at ebook. I think it's $5 at Amazon, so for people that have don't want to spend
Kindle
that much on the printed book. So if you've got a Kindle or if you've got a Nook, put it on ebook. We sell a lot of copies there. And then I think I was just up in our mailing office a couple of weeks ago. I did a bunch of signed copies. I think there's 30 or 40 left on the stack. So if you'd like a signed copy, let my manager, Kelly, know that you heard about the book on Mark and Lauren's show, and I'll have him send out a signed copy.
Awesome.
That's excellent. Wow.
Excellent.
Hear that, everybody? Get on that now.
Signed copy from the man himself.
Will you sign our Kindle? And for all of you listening, Jeff Mudgett was a good sport, and he did the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. His video is out there somewhere. You know, he lives in Vegas, so it's not such a horrible thing to get cold water doused on you out there. But
more like the ice bucket mist.
I did it in San Diego, so it was a little cold.
Dang it.
But, you know, and I got in trouble. I had to donate a little bit more money because I cussed when the ice was going down my shirt.
I think you're allowed.
Yeah, you get that freebie, Jeff. It's all right.
Is there anything else that you would like to... Go ahead.
Yeah, before we end the show tonight, I'd like to tell people the book is not for everyone. I don't try to sell it to everyone. I generally ask people, if you like Stephen King, if you like that type of feeling that he can generate while you're reading the book, you'll probably like Bloodstains. If you're not into that horror, terror genre, don't do it. It's not for you. It's a book that I hope makes you look at who you are yourself. And like I said earlier, what would you have done had you found yourself in my shoes and your grandfather told you this horrible secret and it changed your life? That's what I want you to get from the book. And if you think you want to take that voyage, take that journey, give it a try. Many people tell me it was a satisfying trip for them, and they're glad they did.
Good.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
I mean, who hasn't wondered where their family tree goes and, you know, where that history starts for them? And, you know, some curiosity will get you just some people who came over from, you know, the motherland.
Mm-hmm.
And other people will find out that the most notorious serial killer in the history of the world was their great-great-grandfather. So, I'm not sure I wish that upon everyone, but, you know, this is what happened to Jeff Mudgett. And now, you know, he's, instead of running from his history, he's embracing it and bringing awareness around about what did happen. And, you know, like you said earlier, trying to put some names and a memorial up or something to recognize these people that were part of the tragedy. So, I don't say tragedy, but murders, I guess. Is there anything else you want to plug or any websites or anything you want to throw up there before we let you go, Jeff?
No, I've had a great time, and Mark and Lauren, thanks so much for asking me on, and good luck with your show.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, brother. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Hey, Mr. Jeff Mudgett.
Mr. Mudgett.
There were so many things I wanted to ask him, but I don't want to give away the book, so I had to hold my tongue.
That's the hardest
part.
There's
so many things.
That is the hardest part about doing it, is you want to tell all of it, you know. I wanted to hear from him about, you know, what was I going to say?
I
wanted to hear from him about what happened in prison.
With the prison. Yeah, the point of his lecture at PHC too. Though I missed most of it because I had, you know, work to do. But was talking about how they wanted to get in there. You know, they needed these grand jury proceedings, and now he's got one step closer.
Yeah.
That's so great.
And it's, I mean, this, again.
So proud of Jeff.
Do the research. This was H.H. Holmes, Jeff's great-great-grandfather, was the first serial killer in the history of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he was convicted of 20-something murders. the belief is that he killed over 200 people.
Yeah.
And then he was out of the country for a period of time that overlaps the Ripper killings in London.
Yeah.
And where was H.H. Holmes? In London.
In London, yeah.
And it just so happens that the Ripper murders stopped when H.H. Holmes came back to the States.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of coincidence there.
No.
There's a lot of fact involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, the murder castle in Chicago was built
right on top of it. You know, I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of either. You know, they built over it. They put the post office there, you know, kind of like leveled it out, poured the concrete, put the post office there and said, we're just not going to talk about it anymore. But you should talk about things like that. Because why are you hiding? Yeah, he was a serial killer. It's not, you know, no one wants to say, hey, my grandfather was a serial killer. But you know what? It happens. The man was a genius.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Let's put it out there. It's part of our history. You can't just cover it up. You can't just cover up the fact that we came here and, like, killed 25 Native American tribes because
yeah.
we decided to move west. You know? You just can't. That's part of our history. Let's tell the story. And he's doing it the right way.
That's right. We're just about out of time, guys. We had a blast talking to Jeff Mudgett.
Yeah.
Don't forget to go to thecaringcoachingcenter.com to change your life.
Yeah, see?
Gotta throw that in there, too. Caringcoachingcenter.com. Thecaringcoachingcenter.com. You go there for a better you. They'll tell you tips on how to change your life, change your health, new body, new lifestyle,
new, body,
new routine, new diet, everything. Next week, we will be talking with...
Ms. Joni Mahan.
Joni Mahan, Bones in the Basement, which... hey, we're in that book. What do you know?
Ah.
Mass Goes on the Paranormal Society has a little bit of a chapter in the back of that book. So we'll have Joni Mahan on here next week.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be talking about Bones in the Basement. There's a lot of things to talk about. That's about the Haunted Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
S.K. Pierce Mansion. Our friends, Edwin and Lillian, own that place. And there's a lot of stuff going on right now trying to restore that. So
I'd like to thank Mark for giving me double the homework because I'm already an avid reader. But now he wants September. He decided, let's make September Authors Month. Lauren, go read all these books.
Wow. Yes, I don't read anything.
No. You know what? I've been wanting to read Bloodstains for a while since we met, Jeff. And I'm really happy that I got a chance to at least start it. So what else is new? That's it?
That's it.
Anything
yeah.
else to say?
No.
Bloodstainsthebook.com. Definitely check it out.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great night. Thank you.